Hi, this is Brian Brown of Slice of Sci-Fi and Kick-Ass Mystic Ninjas. You're listening to episode 29 of Murder at Avedon Hill with P.G. Holyfield.
Welcome to the podcast presentation of Murder at Avedon Hill, the Chronicles of Aramis Cragan, written and produced by P.G. Holyfield. Hi everybody, P.G. Holyfield here. Welcome to episode 29. Just got back from vacation with the family at Myrtle Beach. I did have time to do some audio editing there. And that's allowing me to get this out tonight, so all in all, it was a good trip. This is a short episode, but pretty important one to the grand scheme of things. Hope you enjoy it. Because of the way chapter 29 starts out, I'm going to go ahead and do a short story so far, right before we get into the narrative. Dragon Con is less than a week away. This is my third Dragon Con, and the first that includes appearing on a panel or two. I'll also be accepting an award at the podcast Peer Awards, but not an award that I have won, however. I'll be accepting the Best Podcast Production Award on behalf of my nemesis, Chris Lester. I really don't have this nemesis thing down very well, do I? I fared well in the voting in both the Best Podcast Novel and Best Podcast Production categories, and that means I actually got votes, but I fell short, and it was an honor to be a finalist, and I'm hoping that next year when this podcast is done, we'll make an even bigger dent in these various podcast awards lists. And if Lester thinks he's ever going to see his trophy, well... Wait, I don't want to give away my plans so soon. Anyways, if you come to Dragon Con, I'll be hanging out at the podcasting track. Please stop by and say hi. Now, we didn't have any messages on the Karen line since our listener feedback show last week, so there won't be any chatter after the chapter. I did, however, receive a wonderful email today from Di over at the He and She Said podcast. And I just wanted to say thanks again for the kind words. I also wanted to throw a shout out to Ice Pick and to Paul Fisher from over at the ADD cast. They've been vocal on Twitter and through email lately, getting me geared up to work on the podcast these last few weeks. So thanks. The plan is to get episode 30 out before leaving for Dragon Con on Thursday morning. So, wish me luck. All the audio has been recorded, got all the guest audio, just need to edit the thing. For now though, we have episode 29, which also happens to be chapter 29 of the novel. Enjoy. And now, the story so far. Aramis Cragan was initially hired to discover who killed Lord Avedon's house mistress, Greta Platt. But after 2 days of investigation, Aramis finds himself searching for more than one murderer. Edward Avedon, Lord Avedon's son, has fallen victim to a vampire. And after paying a visit to a murder scene outside of town, Aramis is certain he has determined the identity of that vampire. At the end of episode 28, Aramis Cragan returns to Avedon Hill, ready to confront the woman that had managed to touch his heart only a day before, a woman that he might now have to destroy. Thank you. episode 29 of Murder at Avedon Hill.
Chapter 29. Lane Nichols. The Icon of Treg, Child of Pain.
But are vampires Turim?
Some say the first vampire was the progeny of a union between incarnations of Kaelin and Treg.
Strange that vampires are not welcome in either child's home. Tales of the Children.
Lane retreated two steps and took a moment to admire her work. She had just hung a gold-hinged glass case against one of the stone walls in the basement of the town library.
And now for the finishing touch.
The librarian moved over to a small pack and pulled out a weathered, leather-bound manuscript. Lane knew what she held in her hands was a part of history, a fact that was very important to her. A voice reached her ears. It emanated from the direction of the stairs connecting the basement to the main floor of the library. "I have tried to figure out why you would murder a book dealer, of all people, Ms. Nichols. My only theory is that he did not bring the copy of Arlen Gricka's autobiography with him, or he tried to alter the terms of your arrangement. Am I right?" Aramis's presence had taken Lane by surprise. It was a feeling she had not experienced in many years.
"You walk quietly for one of the living monk."
She held up the book for Aramis to see.
"I'm afraid I wasn't completely honest with you, Aramis. This isn't a copy of Arlen Gricka's autobiography. It is the original."
She smiled a devilish smile, for the first time allowing two short fangs to appear from underneath her upper lip. "So why kill him?" Lane noted that Aramis had not moved at all.
"Peter was a nasty sort of man. He thought he could take advantage of me in that secluded grove."
Lane moved over to the glass case.
"You pull a tiger's tail, as the old saying goes."
She gently placed the manuscript inside, propping it up so it could be seen from the outside. She then closed the lid.
"By the way, I never gave you permission to come down here."
"I have constabulary powers, Ms. Nichols." Aramis still had not moved. His hands were folded inside the sleeves of his robes.
"And I have just admitted to taking the life of a man far from Avedon Hill on the night of Miss Platt's murder. So you have no official right to be here, since your powers only extend to the matter of Greta Platt's unfortunate death."
Aramis's expression did not change. "You may not have killed the house mistress, but you took the life of Lord Avedon's son. That gives me the right to be here." Lane's heightened senses began to process the smells radiating from Aramis, even from across the room. The disgust emanating from his pores tainted everything, but his odor remained laced with another emotion more important to Lane: desire. Even though the monk had positioned himself with a long table between them, and had kept his back to the only obvious exit from the basement, Lane knew it would take little effort to reach his side.
"You will ask for me before we are through, Sir Monk." "No, Sir Aramis, I only gave the boy what he asked for, nothing more."
Lane swung her arm out and pulled on a handle against the wall. Before Aramis could move, the lamps in the room went dark.
"What, you don't believe me now?"
Earlier, before going to the library, Aramis had taken a few moments to speak to Cletus. Aramis did nothing to calm the large man, but spoke with a level voice.
"No, I just want to confirm what you said the other day. Lane Nichols exited and re-entered this gate the night Greta Platt was killed, correct? Yes. Did she have any sort of package with her when she came in?
No, but she always has this backpack with her. She showed it to me once. She had it specially made, waterproof it is. I didn't check it when she came back. She told me the dealer she was supposed to meet never showed up. You keep a ledger detailing everything coming and going through this gate. Why give her special treatment? The house mistress, she told me not to worry about recording the librarian's activities. She never sells anything. She only cares about adding to her collection. Adding to her collection. She's done more than that lately, I'm afraid. Thank you, Cletus.
Aramis pulled Aaron aside.
I need you to find Father Joris and bring him to the library.
Aaron had not been pleased.
But I should come with you. No, you need to do this for me. Now.
Aramis's stare prevented further discussion. Aramis did not wait to see if Aaron would follow his order, instead walking over to Constable Lewis, who was still standing beside Cletus.
Lewis, head to the manor and get Lord Avedon. Explain to him what we found, and only then bring him to the library. I do not want him to arrive too early. It could be dangerous for him.
I'll collect Tanner and Ulrich as well.
Lewis climbed up on his horse and began to lead it and the other two horses up the road towards the manor. Aramis called after the head constable.
Leave the horses at the stable. I need you to approach the library on foot.
He turned back to Cletus.
Do not let anyone through this gate, Cletus. Especially Lane Nichols.
Cletus saluted without a hint of sarcasm.
You have my word, Sir Aramis.
Against his better judgment, Aramis had entered the library without waiting for the others to join him. While he believed Lane had not attacked Aaron, Aramis still wanted to keep him away from the library for as long as possible. A flash from the last conversation he had had with Aaron's mother entered Aramis's consciousness, but he shook it off.
I have no time for this.
Besides, he needed time to speak to the creature alone.
What Edvard wanted. He was a 15-year-old boy. Anything he wanted, you planted in his mind.
Aramis listened for movement, but heard nothing. He backed slowly as he spoke until he felt the frame of the doorway leading to the basement staircase against his back.
He was a special one, as are you, Aramis.
Lane's voice echoed inside his head. Aramis threw up walls to protect his mind against whatever powers the vampire master, or mistress in this case, might possess. However, it did not prevent him from hearing her again.
He discovered what I was, and was not afraid. He begged me to take him, to give him what I have, to take him away from his pain.
Aramis stretched out his mind in an attempt to touch Lane, or at least to determine where she was. While he could not locate her position with his mind, he was relatively sure she was not attempting to compel him in any way. Since he could hear her in his mind, Aramis was relatively sure she would hear him as well.
Do not speak as if you gave him some sort of gift. He is little more than an animal now.
Aramis held a sigh with his right hand within the sleeve of his robe. He sensed movement across the room, but it was not towards him.
He made it back to his family, did he? They have him.
Aramis refused to acknowledge the question, but he was upset with himself for even giving Lane an idea of what he knew.
He refused the gift, Aramis. He drank of me, mixing my blood with his. After 3 days of sharing, he was ready. I took him then. He wakened the next day, his consciousness intact.
Wait, it was your blood that allowed his consciousness to remain.
Even in the darkness, Aramis sensed her amusement at his thirst for knowledge.
I led him down the path. All he had to do was drink the blood of the gift I presented him. He would have been the next Lord Avedon, once I removed his insolent brother from the picture. My place here in Avedon Hill, safe with my books, would have been assured to me for years to come. But he couldn't do it. He fled.
While they conversed, Aramis's eyes adjusted to the darkened basement. He thought he could make out the outline of the handle Lane had pulled, extending from the wall to his left. There were several large bookcases to his right, both along the walls and in the center of the room.
What gift? Who else have you killed?
She's fine, don't you worry. Although she has her own set of problems to deal with. I let her go after Edward ran away. She doesn't remember a thing.
Aramis concentrated, feeling the flow of the river around him gain focus.
So he ran because he had some humanity left within him. Do you curse him for that? Or simply envy him?
Aramis heard another sound from behind one of the bookcases to his right. Lane's voice again erupted in Aramis's mind.
Humanity. This library holds the best and worst of humanity's history. You above all should know humanity has nothing to do with taking life, and neither does good or evil. Edward simply didn't have the courage to join me. I believe that trait has been bred out of the Avedon line. I followed, but I could not find him. Without the gift, his consciousness would have been driven from his mind in a day's time. But if he somehow made it to the manor...
Aramis tried to finish her thought.
How soon after this was Greta killed?
The next night, with his humanity, as you put it, gone, Edward would have killed Greta without thinking.
Aramis had to ask the question, even though he thought he knew the answer.
Aaron was attacked last night at the inn. Was it you?
Royal blood, from a lineage that certainly includes an immortal or two. That would be a treat. But, contrary to what you may think of me, I would never attack either of you. I have too much respect for his family, and too much respect for what you've done for Cairn, brother of Aaron.
It did not surprise Aramis that Lane had recognized Aaron as the son of Renoir Perti, considering the wealth of knowledge available to her. The next few thoughts that entered Aramis's mind were scattered, as Lane pieced together the events of the last few days.
Edvard made it back to the manor. Lapin's Codex. King's Head Moth. No. They can't be considering a king's crown potion. Fools.
Aramis heard a hiss from the far corner of the basement. At the same time, Aramis heard the door of the library open upstairs. It was too late to save Lane Nichols. Aramis was in complete control of the energies flowing around him. He pulled his left hand out of his sleeve and cast his arm out in front of him like he was throwing a knife. A burst of air hit the handle on the wall, knocking it upward. Whatever system Lane used to light the basement worked well. Flames rose from several enclosed sconces around the room, flooding the basement with light. Aramis sprang over the table, landing where Lane had been standing when he had entered the room. He looked down the rows of bookshelves searching for her. Lane was nowhere to be seen. From farther away, he heard one last thought from Lane Nichols.
Aramis, don't let them give Edvard the potion. Please.
Hi there, my name is Myrrh Lafferty, and last winter my superhero novel, Playing for Keeps, was the first book to be delivered via audio and PDF podcast at the same time. 20,000 people have enjoyed this novel, and now it's coming out in print. Playing for Keeps will be published by Swarm Press this August 25th. Many of you helped this book become one of the most popular in podcast history, and I'd like your help again. I need to make a splash on Amazon to push my book up the charts and get more exposure. So I'm asking you to head to Amazon on August 25th to purchase Playing for Keeps. Don't think that since I'm hitting print, I'm forsaking the podcasting. During the month of August, I'll be celebrating the print release of Playing for Keeps with several treats. I'm reawakening stories of the third wave, bringing you content connected to the world of Playing for Keeps from hot names in podcasting, like Christopher Lester, Casey Schultz, Matthew Wayne Selznick, J.C. Hutchins, and Matt Wallace, just to name a few. I'm holding a video contest for the song Playing for Keeps, where contestants can win Swarm books, Beatnik Turtle CDs, or a flip video camera. Close to the launch of the book, I'll be re-releasing the PDF, along with all the original comic book art, styled by Jared Axelrod and Natalie Metzger, and an exclusive can't-find-anywhere-else short story called Parasite Awakens. And on the day of, the day when we do our assault on Amazon and make you all heroes of the 25th, you'll have frequent video updates from me letting you know how the book is doing and perhaps some messages from other podcasters. It should be very amusing. So go now to playingforkeepsnovel.com, right now, and subscribe to get the new content, the PDFs, and the video updates. And remember to go to Amazon.com on August 25th to purchase the book. I can't do it without you.
Every day is better with Mad Science, so be a winner. Use Mad Science.
This has been a Mad Science public service announcement, brought to you by the fine scientists aboard the submersible sailing vessel, the SS Isopod. Find out more about the SS Isopod and her crew at www.radioisopod.com.
You've been listening to Murder at Avedon Hill, a podcast novel written and produced by P.G. Holyfield. Please visit pgholyfield.com for more information on this novel and the author. Most of the music in this podcast generously provided by Shira Common through Magnatune.com. Magnatune.com, they are not evil. Additional music generously provided by Kevin MacLeod through his website at incompetech.com. Be sure to check out Murder at Avedon Hill at podiobooks.com, and if you are so inclined, please post a review at iTunes, at Podcast Pickle, or at podiobooks.com. Audio comments about the podcast can be left on the Cairn line at 704-315-5884. Or go to pgholyfield.com and click on the Call Me button to leave comments. This podcast is copyright 2007-2008. By P.G. Holyfield and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 U.S. license.